All right. It is 6 p.m. and I will call this evening's Planning Commission meeting to order. Can I have a roll call, please?
Chair Maravilla?
Here.
Vice Chair Berlin?
Here.
Commissioner Roof?
Here.
Commissioner Sackerson?
Here.
Awesome. The next item is our flag salute. If Commissioner Sackerson could lead us, that would be great.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The next item is our agenda review. Would any of my fellow commissioners like to revise the order of the agenda tonight? All right. And that leads us to our public comment period. This public comment period is an invitation to members of the community to present issues, thoughts, or suggestions on matters that are not scheduled on tonight's agenda. And they should also be limited to the matters that are within the jurisdiction of the Planning Commission. If you are on Zoom, you can use the raise hand feature to indicate your desire to provide comment. Is there anyone here tonight in the room that would like to provide public comment? Nope. Is there anyone online this evening?
Madam Chair, there are no members of the public on Zoom.
Great. Thank you so much. With that, I will close the public comment period and we'll move on to number six. I didn't check my email this afternoon, but was there any written communications?
None this evening.
Okay, that's good. All right, then item seven is our consent agenda, which is our approval of minutes. Is there questions or anything from my fellow commissioners about the minutes? No? Is there any public comment on the minutes? None in the room. I assume there's still no one online, but I'll double check.
No, there are still no one on Zoom.
Okay. With that, I will motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
We have a second. Can I have a vote, please?
Chair Maravilla?
Yes.
Vice Chair Berlin?
Yes.
Commissioner Roof?
Yes.
Commissioner Sackerson?
Yes.
Great. Moving right along to our public hearing items, item 8A, which is the continued consideration of amendments to Title 16 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code regarding accessory dwelling units, Development Code Amendment 23-001. Do we have a staff report?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the Planning Commission, Andrew Perez, City's Planning Manager, and I'm here this evening to present a staff report for this item. So beginning with a little background and why we're here tonight, the last update to the city's ADU ordinance occurred in September of 2022 when City Council adopted Ordinance 717. The purpose of that update, similar to why we're here this evening, is to comply with state housing bills that passed in 2019 and 2020. Some of the significant changes that occurred at that ordinance update included the elimination of lot size requirements, a reduction of setbacks and parking requirements for ADUs. That ordinance created objective design standards for ADUs and also prohibited front yard ADUs in most circumstances. Within the past 2 years, new sets of bills regarding ADU development were passed and require another update to our local ordinance in order to comply with state law. So this table is taken from the staff report and summarizes the six bills that were passed in the past 2 years that affect the development of ADUs. The first two on this list were the most significant in terms of impacts to our local ordinance. So SB 897 increases the maximum height allowed for certain ADUs, and Assembly Bill 2221 prohibits an agency from imposing front setback requirements that would prohibit the construction of ADUs up to 800 square feet in size. So the ordinance proposed and in front of you this evening has been amended to incorporate both those changes. Assembly Bill 976 states that a city cannot impose owner occupancy requirements for ADUs. No actions required because our city ordinance already complies with that, that law. Assembly Bill 1033 included an optional provision that would allow agencies to allow ADUs to be conveyed separately from the primary dwelling unit. So this would kind of be similar to a condo situation. The city has chosen so far not to go down that road, so it's not included in the draft ordinance. Assembly Bill 671 allows CalHome funds to be used for ADU development. This really just affects the State Department of Housing and Community Development, so no changes required or proposed in the local ordinance. And finally, Assembly Bill 1332 requires that each agency develop a pre-designed or pre-approved ADU program. Fortunately, our city already has an active program and is compliant with that bill. So this slide summarizes kind of the four main changes to our ordinance, beginning with a new format. If you're familiar with our ADU ordinance, you'll notice that it does take on a pretty different format. It's one that's been developed by the city attorney's office and is recommended because it has been adopted by multiple agencies and confirmed as compliant by the State Department of Housing and Community Development. The ordinance also proposes to establish a new permit type, which would be aptly named an ADU permit. Projects that were subject to an ADU permit. This allows the city to impose standards beyond the basic level building permit standards. We'll go through each of these in more detail, but this allows the city to impose objective design standards in certain cases, establish maximum size limits, and include provisions for historic protection. Changes to the height limits were included to comply with Senate Bill 897. And then finally, with regard to development standards, the proposed ordinance reduces interior and rear yard setbacks and also allows units up to 800 square feet in the front setback to comply with Assembly Bill 2221. And then finally, also exempts all ADUs from floor area ratio and lot coverage maximums. So looking a bit closer at the new format, as I mentioned, it's recommended by the city attorney. One of the reasons is because HCD has really suggested and encouraged each agency to have its ADU ordinance stand on its own. So our ordinance defines all terms related to ADU development, no longer makes any references to other code sections or city documents, and establishes a process for ADU approvals all within the ordinance. So another benefit of the new format is it's intended to be easier to understand and implement for both the public and staff. And that's an important feature because our housing element really encourages the development of ADUs, and we want to do whatever we can to streamline that process. So looking closer at the ADU permit, government code and state law requires that agencies approve four categories of ADUs with just a building permit. So those are ADUs that are created through the conversion of existing space or an accessory structure on a single-family residential lot. Also, detached ADUs on single-family lots with 4-foot side and rear setbacks and no larger than 800 square feet. Also, ADUs created through the conversion of non-livable space on multifamily residential lots. And finally, up to 2 detached ADUs on multifamily lots, as long as the ADUs are less than 18 feet in height. So looking at the ordinance, the four categories of ADUs are only subject to the standards listed in subsection E of the proposed ordinance. So that really includes things such as height, fire sprinklers, prohibition of short-term rentals, and some other really basic type standards. So ADUs that do not meet the criteria for a building permit only are triggered to require or must obtain a ADU permit plus the building permit. So the ADU permit is required if the city wants to impose those locally approved objective design standards. So these are things like our objective design standards, provisions for historic protections, maximum size for an ADU, some of that nature, just ones that go above and beyond the state requirements. So those projects that require an ADU permit are subject to the standards listed in subsections E and F of the proposed or contained in the proposed ordinance. So an example of an ADU that would require an ADU permit is a detached ADU on a single-family lot that's greater than 800 square feet. So moving on to height, the existing ordinance limits ADUs to either 16 feet or the height limit of the underlying zoning district, and that depends on the size of the unit. However, as I mentioned, Senate Bill 897 does create new height limits for certain types of ADUs. Basically, it falls into three categories. So detached ADUs on lots with multifamily dwellings, maybe up to 18 feet in height. ADUs attached to a primary dwelling on a single-family residential lot, maybe up to 25 feet in height. And finally, detached ADUs maybe up to 20 feet in height on lots located within 1/2 mile of a major transit stop. So here we, as we drafted this draft ordinance, staff looked at the number of, you know, applications that we've had the past year, and it's really, it looks like the implications of this change will be minor. You know, majority of the ADUs proposed in the city are detached on single-family lots, so we don't have a lot of detached ADUs on multifamily residential lots or attached ADUs. And then for the third point, none of our transit stops in the city qualify as a major transit stop. So as that term is defined in the Public Resources Code, it means that there are service intervals at 15 minutes or less. And pretty much across the board, our bus stops have about 1 hour intervals. So it's included in the ordinance to comply with state law and in the event that we get a little higher level of service in our transit system, but at this time, it's not anticipated to have any impact. So looking at setbacks, our existing ordinance states that our by right ADUs, so essentially ADUs that are less than 1,000 square feet and 16 feet in height or lower, are subject to 4-foot side and rear setbacks, whereas units greater than 1,000 square feet are subject to the setbacks of the underlying zone. It also includes some language that prohibits front yard ADUs unless no feasible alternative exists, where feasibility is determined based on the presence of either severe slope in the backyard, an easement, drainage features, or other structures. As proposed, the draft ordinance would allow building permit only ADUs in the front setback. So these are the detached ADUs that are less than 800 square feet in size. Projects that are larger than that and require an ADU permit would be subject to the 20-foot front setback requirement. And one additional change is that all ADUs would be subject to the side and rear setback requirement of 4 feet rather than relying on the setback of the underlying zone, which in some cases, or in all cases, is greater than 4 feet. So we don't make that reference to other code sections. Again, staff looked at the applications for ADUs in 2023, which there were 33. And of those, only 2 were subject to greater than 4 foot side setback. So this suggests that the impacts of this change will be relatively minor. With regards to floor area ratio and lot coverage, similar to setbacks, ADUs that met the by right standard got some relief from the standard and were exempt actually from floor area ratio and lot coverage maximums. Whereas those ADUs that did not qualify with the by right criteria were subject to those standards of the underlying zone. As proposed, the draft ordinance would exempt all ADUs from floor area ratio or lot coverage maximums. For a couple of different reasons. So one, state law prohibits imposing development standards such as floor area ratio or lot coverage on ADUs that would require an ADU to be less than 800 square feet in size. And again, so many of the city's ADU applications in 2023 were units less than 800 square feet, so many of which only 3 would have been subject to floor area ratio and lot coverage standards as they currently exist. Moving on to objective design standards, staff reviewed existing design standards in the ADU ordinance and amended some of them to eliminate any potential subjectivity. So this included terms such as simulate the appearance of or dominant, anything that could be subjective or interpreted a number of ways by two different individuals. I'd also added objective design standards to maintain privacy between properties and also maintain some neighborhood character. And pursuant to state law, only ADUs that are subject to the ADU permit would be subject to the objective design standards. So, and of these, city also exempted projects using the city's pre-designed ADU plans and factory-built housing to encourage folks to use those options to develop an ADU on their property. One of the optional resources that is included in the draft ordinance is provisions for the protection of historic resources. So this requires ADUs on properties within 500 feet of a property listed on the California Register of Historic Places to be located on a lot so it's not visible from the right-of-way. Again, this only applies to ADUs that require an ADU permit. And just for reference, there's only one property in the city that's on the California Register, which is the Paulding House on Crown Hill, although there are a number of other properties that are potentially eligible for listing. And finally, the environmental review section. So previous updates to state ADU law also amended CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act, to include a statutory exemption for amendments to local agencies' ADU ordinances. And therefore, pursuant to section 15282H of the CEQA guidelines, the adoption of the ordinance updates is exempt from further environmental review. Looking at next steps, so we're here this evening to get a recommendation from the Planning Commission to City Council to adopt updates to the ordinance. That could be as proposed or with changes as suggested by the Commission. It's anticipated that staff will introduce the draft ordinance to City Council in February, and if supportive at that time, we would schedule the ordinance to go to Council again for an adoption hearing, and then the provisions would become effective 30 days after that adoption. And also, I should add on this slide that after adoption, staff will send the ordinance to HCD to confirm that it complies with state law. So in conclusion, staff recommends that the Planning Commission adopt a resolution recommending the City Council adopt amendments to the ADU ordinance and also determine that the ADU ordinance update is statutorily exempt pursuant to section 15282H of CEQA.
Thank you. I will take some questions from fellow commissioners. Yeah. Commissioner Berlin.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Madam Chair, appreciate it. Hey, Andrew, thanks for a thorough, big staff report. I appreciate that. I appreciate you sending it to us early as well. It's a lot to process, just the volume of it, but I understand the intent, and that, as you laid it out, I appreciate your very thorough explanation there. Just a couple of questions maybe for the general public as well as us. How does the ADU approval process affect our RINA numbers? Or impact it, I guess, or influence it, you know?
So when we went through the housing element update 2020, one of the strategies that the city used to achieve our RINA and show the state that we can meet our allocation was to identify a number of ADUs being permitted throughout the eight-year planning period. I think this past year in 2023 was the first year we met that goal, our annual goal of, I believe it's 32 ADUs per year. We got 33 applications in, so that was encouraging. But to go to the point of your question, we do rely heavily on ADUs to meet our RINA. So we really want to streamline and make the process as easy as possible.
So basically, so people may not know, RINA means a regional housing number allocation. That's basically our city has been given a mandate to provide so many housing units. And is that
kind of? Yeah, that's correct. So through projections, the state develops housing forecasts for the entire state. And then regionally, there's a number that's assigned to our county. And then SLOCOG, with the agencies, work to allocate a certain number of housing units to each jurisdiction. And then those within our jurisdictions broken down to our income levels. So we have low income or very low income, moderate, and then above moderate.
Okay. So one of the questions I have is an ADU counts basically as a single family credit.
Yes, it does.
But how do you categorize which income level that is in the fact that it's not being sold separately from the house that it's being, you know, adjoining?
So the RENA numbers take into account both ownership and rental units. And then a few years ago, the county had a study commissioned looking at the affordability of both manufactured homes and accessory dwelling units. And so based on that data, it's assumed that half of the ADUs permitted fall into the low income category and half fall into the moderate income category.
Okay. Yeah. I it dawned on me as you were speaking. I was like, well, how do we know? One of the things that I saw in here too, and it's a term that's used a lot, is the junior ADUs or JADUs. And can you explain what a junior ADU is? Does that mean it's within the existing four walls of an existing residence? Is that kind of my understanding?
That's correct. So within the four walls of a residence, could also be in an attached garage. There's a maximum size of 500 square feet. And I think one thing that's kind of makes JADUs distinct is that they may share bathroom facilities with the primary unit and also cooking facilities. So so it has to have its own independent exterior entrance, but it can share an internal passageway.
Okay. And do the numbers for RENA numbers for credits for a JADU the same as an ADU?
Yes, they do.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Just curious. And then I was reading in the laws, I thought I had read on the table that you provided that junior ADUs, I thought they had an owner-occupied requirement. Or did I see that? Do junior ADUs have an owner-occupied requirement?
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to clarify, when I said that state law says ADUs cannot have an owner-occupancy requirement, so that only applies to accessory dwelling units and not junior accessory dwelling.
Okay.
JADUs, yeah.
So anytime we're looking at a single-family house that is considering a junior or JADU, which means within the four walls or the garage, the owner of that particular house has to live in either the JADU or the primary residence. Is that right?
Is correct.
Can live in either or?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I'm trying to, I'm seriously, these are all questions. I have comments later, but one of the other things that I was wondering about, the terms that you used, non-livable space, it came up in the thing, and I was thinking to myself, well, what's a non-livable space that can be converted to an ADU? And so I got to think, is that a pool house or a tool shed? Or, you know, what is the definition or more? I don't know what that means to convert a non-livable space to an ADU. Can you expand on that?
Yes, so I'm looking it up right now. The government code, we use that language with some intent. Mm-hmm. It comes directly from the government code, and it's defined within the
Yeah, I'm not trying to put you on the spot. It's just one of those things that I don't understand what that could possibly be. I understand it comes from the definitions, but I'm sorry I didn't give you that question in advance.
So actually on page 21 of your packet,
okay,
part of the definitions, so it's basically if it's not habitable space, which for whatever reason does include basements and attics, but does not include a garage or any accessory. So that's kind of, we use an inverse there.
Uh-huh.
And that's how non-livable space is determined.
Okay. So would a garage be a non-livable space then by that definition? Because under this, living area does not include a garage.
Yes.
So would a non-livable...
So garage is non-livable area.
Yeah. Okay.
Bruce, may I...
yeah, of course.
The problem about the website, it does state it as it's not exhaustive, but it's storage rooms, boiler rooms, garages, attics, and basements.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. That's helpful. And another term that you use that I'm sorry, and you did maybe expand on it, a by right ADU. And what does that terminology mean? I'm not trying.
So
I got a lot of questions.
Yeah, not a problem. So in our existing current ordinance, we have what are called by right provisions. So it allows these by right ADUs, which basically more relief from the development standards. So for a one bedroom or studio unit, it has a maximum size of 850 square feet mm-hmm. and a height limit of 16 feet. Mm-hmm. And for units with two or more bedrooms, that increases to 1,000 square feet and maintains that 16-foot height maximum.
Okay.
So if you fall within those parameters, then you're afforded the relief from the setback and floor area ratio, lot coverage, et cetera.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of had a feeling that that's like just by definition, again, by square footage and how they're breaking them out. One of the things that I saw was the deed restriction. And one of the terms in the resolution is rental terms, and no ADUs or JADUs may be rented for a term that is shorter than 30 days. So no short-term rentals. Is that deed restricted that way? So any future owner would understand there's no way for them to flip this into an Airbnb short-term rental. Is it deed restricted, that aspect of it?
Yes. Yeah. So that deed restriction would be recorded against the property. And just so the public and the commission knows, that prohibition on short-term rentals comes directly from the state law.
Yeah. Okay. Just because of my own, again, I don't know many people that have ADUs yet. I think it's the wave is coming still, but I think there's a lot of people that have this impression that they may be able to put an ADU on their lot and immediately turn it to Airbnb and income. So mm-hmm. I think it'd be wise to everybody be aware of that up front. And I don't know whether that's in the packets of information that are going out to people, but I would suggest that before too long, whoever's picking up a packet, that says this is not an application process for short-term rentals. I don't know.
It's often a topic of conversation when staff meets with applicants at the counter.
Yeah, just I think there are a lot of misconceptions about how an ADU could be used to generate income. So that's just, that's more of a comment. But
and just okay. As an FYI also, we have met the cap on short-term rentals in the city.
Okay.
And so it's kind of a double no.
Yeah, right.
We'll try to get that information.
All the more reason that gets out there, right. Okay. So the one other last question I have, I guess, is what about, I think I saw something on non-conforming zoning code conditions, building code violations, and unpermitted structures. It's on page 31 of our packet, but section H. And it says the city will not deny an ADU or JADU application due to a non-conforming zoning condition, building code violation, or unpermitted structure. So my question is, and it's conditioned there 5 years, like constructed before January 1st, 2018. My question is, what if there is something that's built after 2018 and is, you know, a non-conforming, I guess, non-legal thing? Will they have to then, if it becomes city's knowledge, will they have to go through the ADU process and convert that? Say, I'm just thinking about a garage, for example. There's many people that have converted garages to living space. Will they technically need to approach the city and get an ADU permit, or are they given some kind of grandfather exception?
Those property owners would still need to go through the process. Yeah, it's just so they need to go through the process, but the city can't deny that based on fact that they did it without a permit. So it just needs to happen, but
they still will go through the process. There's no bias or anything against them. It's just, we need to make you conforming.
Exactly. Yep.
Basically. Okay. Those are all the questions I have. Thanks very much, Andrew. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Commissioner Berlin. Commissioner Roof.
I had one question ahead of time, and then as you were giving the presentation, I was thinking of a few more things. just for the public to know, does the department have any sense of how many unpermitted ADUs there are kind of out there right now that would need to go through this process?
We don't have a good handle on that number. I would say it's very few. There have been a couple that have been identified through neighborhood complaints or just kind of our inspectors being in the field, but still it's, I would say, three or less.
Okay. And if it's before 2018, then they would go through this process, the process Bruce is referring to?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And then I had a question about JADUs, but Bruce, answer that one. And then, oh, I know, the by right category seems like it applies to the 800 square feet, less than 800 square feet. So I just wanted to verify one of the pre-approved city plans, or there's a few that, how many are there that fall into that under 800?
Four of the six floor plans.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So four of the six right now, people could pick from those and do the by right.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. So the largest of those four is 749 square feet.
Okay. Like just right under there. Okay.
Yep.
And then I was thinking too about this issue with the front yard and no feasible alternative. And just like driving around, you know, you see a house that's like on the back of their lot. Mm-hmm. Would that be considered like a no feasible alternative if they're on the back and they want to build something in the front? Or would they still need to have the 20-foot setback in the front?
So the no feasible alternative language exists in our current ordinance, but would go away with this proposed ordinance. So if they wanted to, that property owner wanted to build an ADU that was greater than 800 square feet, they would still need to meet that 20-foot front setback.
Okay.
And if that wasn't possible based on the configuration or dimensions of their lot, you know, they can go smaller, and or the city can make them go smaller too, and still be in compliance with state law.
Okay. And then I had a question about the conveyance, just so I'm understanding. That means like selling that part of the property. Is that what that's referring
Correct.
To?
Correct.
Okay. So that was a part of the state law that it was optional, so we didn't change, or the ordinance isn't proposed to be changed in that area?
That's correct.
Okay. So if someone did want to do that, could they still do that? Split the lot and sell off the ADU portion of it?
No. They couldn't. So in the optional provision, the ADU is treated like almost like an airspace condo. So you'd be buying kind of that airspace, and it'd almost be like a subdivision map.
Oh.
So it wouldn't necessarily be a lot split. It'd be
okay.
Kind of a condo map.
Which... And then what would that be? Would they need to some kind of permit to do that, or how would that function?
We haven't really envisioned what that process would look like because we didn't go down that road.
Homeowner wanted to do that, like what would they do? Or
so we would need to. The state law gives the local agency the authority to either allow that process or not, and at this point, it's not proposed, so it is not an option yet for. Or will not be an option
so
for.
So this would fall under the no category
yes.
right now, but yep. then that could be looked
Yeah, if there's will
later.
From the commission or the council to go that route, then we'd have to develop that process. And
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Do you have any more questions? Okay.
Can I jump on that very same, sorry, if you don't mind. So Mike, I'm tying on to what Virginia just asked you about the lot split and ADUs. I'm wondering, it wasn't SB9 the lot split one? I don't remember the numbers. I've been so many of them, I kind of forget. But SB9, I thought that was truly single family zoning could be split and then turned into two lots, legal conforming lots. And then each of those lots then would be able to have primary residence and now up to two ADUs. Is that correct?
That is correct. There is a provision in SB9 that prevents a lot from being split in a way in which you have a primary dwelling and an accessory dwelling on separate lots. So it's kind of semantics at that point, but
yeah.
You could achieve what you described through SB9.
That's what I'm wondering about, and I wonder if those don't conflict a little bit. I don't know what kind of discussions or what the legal team says about that stuff, because I can foresee some people looking at it to maximize their return on their thing, to virtually turn those into a separate lot and separate ADUs and sell it. So, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and but I think the way that assembly bill, we're talking about the, I guess, condoize the ADUs, that's different than a lot split.
Okay.
So if you can think of it as creating like a postage stamp where the ADU is and just selling that part,
uh-huh,
as opposed to a lot split where you're creating
two entirely
separate lots.
Okay. Yeah, it's more, well, it's illegal, first of all, it's a legal separation. It would carry, well, I don't know though, because it doesn't carry its own deed, right? It doesn't carry its own defined, I'm talking about the ADU situation. Like you said, it's airspace.
Yeah, and it's kind of hard to discuss without having actually investigated that as a possibility, but it can be complicated.
Yeah, all right. We'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
Sorry I brought up that issue. I just thought of that as we were talking about the conveyance.
I think it's
issue.
All things we will have to deal with in the near future, probably, is my guess.
I'm just thinking when, you know, if somebody, with the way housing prices are, you may think, oh, okay, well, if I could buy this parcel and then get $500,000 for this thing, then you know, I could see it just going down that road.
Could be the new starter home.
Yeah. Might have to be. Commissioner Sackerson, do you have any questions?
Well, first off, thank you, commissioners. Those were actually really good questions, and it's fascinating to think about. With SB 9, my understanding is if you are splitting your lot, it does have to be roughly equal size, does it not? Like,
yeah, it needs to be a 60-40 split.
Okay, so it wouldn't categorically, I think, affect this so much. But I just had a couple questions just about AG specifically. Like, we were talking about ADUs in the front yard. Have we had applications go through in the last year or two and anything be built in the front yards? I don't know that I've seen it, but I'm also not very...
One definitely comes to mind, okay, in which there's a pretty steep slope in the backyard, and it was a long, narrow lot in which the house was kind of situated towards the back of the lot, okay, up against a pretty steep slope. In that case, it was a pretty good candidate for a front yard ADU. So that permit was issued, I'd say, in December. So I think they're looking to break ground here pretty soon.
Okay. And then you answered quite a few of my questions just with your staff report. So thank you again for being very thorough. It saves us a lot of time. But tagging on with the JADUs, same question. Have we had many people say, hey, I'd like to convert and apply for a JADU? I know it's not necessarily relevant to this, but.
I don't have the exact numbers, but there has been some demand, a pretty high demand of JADUs and a lot of interest, and I'd say maybe a dozen.
Okay. And I don't know, this is a very subjective, I guess, question to answer, but have you as a staff noticed any changes or feedback from the community regarding these ADUs being built and applied for in these past like 3 or 4 years, a difference in any of our housing problems, like people saying, hey, it's been really nice to have more additional rentals? I don't know if we have enough to even make an impact yet, but.
So from a community opinion, it's hard to speak. We haven't heard of anyone saying, yeah, housing, we're in a great spot.
Right.
You know, conversely, we haven't heard any complaints of saying, you know, our setbacks are too small for ADUs, which I think some of us anticipated with the 4-foot side and rear setbacks. We might get some of those complaints, but there's been a number of them that have been constructed without any pushback from neighbors or, you know, the public at large. So encouraged by that.
Thank you. That's all. I just had a couple small questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
So close.
These are great questions for my other commissioners. I think mine are probably a little more random. The impact fees for the less than 750 square feet, why didn't we just make that 800? So it could be similar to the, you know what I mean?
It's a valid point. The 750 number came directly from the government code. So
I would suggest maybe conforming that a little bit if we could, like, make it simple for people. That way they don't have to think of these two different numbers when they're, like, applying for this. And, you know, they can do this with the building permit, but then they need to pay impact fees if it's 50 feet, you know, square feet less with that. Just popped in my head of, like, why don't we just make this more simple? The other thing that I was, and you might not be able to answer this, when you're looking at heights of 16 feet and 18 feet, what is the difference? Like, I know it's 2 feet, but, like, what does that mean, like, for what you're building?
Kind of being on our side of the counter, it's hard to answer that. But, you know, generally, I don't know if it makes a whole lot of difference to the development community. Hopefully I'm not speaking out of line, but I think it's, you know, just a matter of, you know, roof pitch and aesthetics.
So it's more of an aesthetic choice rather than, like, we can fit a higher ceiling. I don't know what, if, or something that would make the space feel bigger inside is, I don't know enough about building actual construction
could allow for
to make that
higher plate heights, but I still don't see 18 feet being enough to fit a two-story structure. So I think it's
you know, kind of arbitrary. I just bring it up because, like, we have, it's all, when I'm reading this and I'm going, it can be 16 feet in these cases and 18 feet in this case, but it all depends if you're close to a transportation unit and, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, again, why are we making this so complicated if it really doesn't mean much? I just see this as an opportunity to, and I really love that we're, like, separating this from everything because it does make the process so much more simplified for the owner as well as the builders and everything like that. And I'm just wondering if there's other, if we could simplify it in any other way so it's not so confusing for the people that might be coming in. The builders, I mean, they know, you know, they deal with this all the time, but the homeowners are, like, me probably going, what's the difference between a 16 foot and an 18
foot?
Yeah,
and I wonder if the difference in the 16 to 18 foot might have to do with the ability to provide a loft sort of space, like a more comfortable loft space in some of these units with as Andrew said, with a roof pitch that's more manageable.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so in that kind of case, I'm kind of going, well, why are we just limiting that to, you know, places within a transit system that, quite frankly, we're never going to have on the Central Coast because we're not going to have every 15 minutes having a bus system or train. That would be amazing, but it's not going to happen. If we can build more comfortable places for people, why not just give them the extra 2 feet? It's kind of my point of view of that. Or was there a reason why we just decided to just to conform this with the state law?
Yeah. Essentially, the template provided mirror state law pretty closely. And and that's why we went that direction.
My suggestion would be to just get them 18 feet. Like, it's really not that much of a difference. I you know, and if it could provide more comfortable space for people living in these small units, I would want to do that personally. That was my only question. Sorry that they're completely random, but it's a learning process for all of us. Unless anyone has any other questions right now, I was going to turn it over to public comment. Okay. Public comment in the room? Alexandra?
I guess I'm easy to read. my question is, why are accessory dwelling units not being permitted in the front yard?
I believe this change in the ordinance would be permitting them in the front yard. In most cases.
As proposed, a detached ADU of up to 800 square feet would now be allowed in the front yard. With regard to the current ordinance, that was kind of put in there by our city council during study sessions and just the adoption process we went through a couple of years ago.
Okay, so that part of the presentation was existing, not new.
Correct.
Okay.
Did you have any other questions? No. Any questions? Okay. Is there, I don't know if there's anyone online right now, but does anyone in the Zoom have a public comment?
Madam Chair, there are no members of the public on Zoom.
Thank you. I can't tell from here, so I have to ask. With that, I'll close the public comment on this item. And I heard you have some comments.
Yeah, I just have a few comments. thank you, and really appreciate staff's patience with all of us. It's a lot. It's a lot in one chunk, even though a lot of it seems to be administrative. My first reaction, and I sent you guys a communication, I'm a visual person, and it is more complex than it needs to be is my initial feedback on that. If I'm walking up to the counter as a homeowner, I want to know, start to finish, what do I do? And so my suggestion was for a flow chart. I don't know if I said, did I send you links to a couple cities have some flow charts for ADU? And I know that's a big task too, but I do think somehow you need to come up with a matrix. I got to figure there's other cities doing this exact same thing right now where you say, I've got a blank lot with no existing ADU. Where do I start? So whatever you can do to simplify the process. And again, for me, it's a flow chart. There's going to be exceptions to that, obviously, but I think that would be helpful. Overall, I think the intent of the ordinance is headed in the right direction. I think it's great and super proactive to get our legal team that's already doing this for other cities to use, not reinvent the wheel. Do what's working, and they're going to, handle the legal aspect of it as well. So that's hugely important and not, something that we're tending with after the fact. So kudos to the staff for using the resources we have to do that. And I think also using the knowledge that we have about what we've seen in recent times. I don't know where this is going. None of us do, obviously, with SB9 and housing prices and everything else. I think we know we need to provide more housing. And this is a way to do that. And whatever we can do to make this as objective as possible and not subjective. And as long as building safety and health are primary, you've addressed, we didn't talk about parking tonight, but we're not too often in a case. I don't know how many, you said 33 last year, and you haven't had numerous people flocking to City Hall saying, we let this ADU in and now I can't get parked. I don't think that's what's going to happen here. We're talking about, small scale transition. So that being said, I think the intent is good. I think this is a really good beginning, and I'm sure City Council is going to weigh in on it and do their tweaks on it too. Whatever you can take from us tonight and tweak it some, I think for me, simplicity is the key. And I think Jamie brought up a good one. Why 750 versus 800? Let's just make it uniform. Even if the state says 750, maybe we say 850 because it matches or 800 because it matches our other. And whether you need 16 and 18, what's the difference? Make it. So whatever you can do to simplify it, and let's see if I had any other quick. I think that's it. I do really appreciate you guys and the ability to think this stuff through and to compare it to other municipalities and see what they're doing and see how it's working out. So that being said, thanks. And I support the effort for sure.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Roof?
I just had one more comment. I was really happy to see in the report that the city was being proactive with that pre-approved plan. And I've commended you all on it before, but I just want to reiterate, those houses are beautiful. Like the different finishes and the different configurations were really appealing, and I'm glad to see people are responding to that. I think that 33 probably recognizes that here's the plans, they're all ready to go, and I believe you guys, or the city also provided people to come out to your site and see if it was feasible there and give you some starting guidelines. So I just want to commend staff for supporting that for sure. And I also agree with Commissioner Berlin about the flow chart. I think that would be really cool. I'm visual too. So I think the more easy we can make it for people, the more accessible it will be. So that was my comment. Go ahead, Commissioner. Sorry.
I I find myself kind of in the middle here with, yes, first off, with the flow chart. Anything to make the application process easy when you go into City Hall and you're asking to apply for anything. Ease of use is always fantastic. I don't know what the process is currently, so certainly no complaints, but I love the idea. As far as making it standardized across the board, you know, 800 versus 750, I don't know if I could throw all my weight behind that specifically for that and the 16 and 18 foot, because I have to believe that those numbers are in there for a reason. Whether or not those reasons are necessary, it certainly should be questioned. And I would say, as far as my opinion on that particular topic, that would be a question back to the attorneys of like, okay, why did you choose to keep this language the way that you chose to do so? And if not necessary, then yes, how can we reword it? That being said, I don't know if we were to make such a recommendation, how far back it pushes this with going to council. What would that look like?
It really wouldn't change our timeline or process at all. It'd just be incorporated into the minutes and into the recommendation that this commission forwards to City Council.
Okay. That's
and
helpful.
If I could kind of interrupt.
Yeah,
and, just want to note that we do have a housing element program that does direct staff to kind of develop a flowchart and streamline the process and develop materials that we can disseminate that really help the public understand that. So that is going to be part of this effort through the adoption process. So we
Perfect.
Should see that
awesome.
Sometime this spring.
Perfect. Thank you.
And thank you, Bruce, for sending some examples. Well,
yeah, it makes a big difference because I was like, what's a JDADU and what do I need? You know, so, again, it may not capture it all, but at least it will give you or a general public an idea of what am I starting out with? And, you know, if yes, no, you know, if no, go here. So it just helps understanding where the turns are and why the turns are there. And it may not capture it all, but I think with staff's help, somebody can walk through that process and understand where they fit.
And we're all collectively dumber as we go through that process anyway. For some reason, it lowers intelligence.
For sure. It gets complicated.
It's like choosing health insurance or something.
Exactly.
You just totally get that.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought of one more question.
Yeah, go for it.
Now that it seems like we're kind of ramping up to meeting that goal, our local builders kind of, once they get familiar, is it easier for them because they kind of know what they're doing? Is that maybe that's a private sector question, but I'm just wondering if the building community is supportive of this and do we have the capacity to keep that 32 kind of going?
I hope so. I think in talking to, you know, designers, contractors, architects, and our builders, they're all really, really busy. So we hope they have the capacity. And I think, you know, the pre-design plan program is helpful and that takes some of the stress off local design professionals. But then we still need the building tradespeople to actually build the houses. So, we as staff will do everything we can to help alleviate the process, streamline it, cut down timelines and get people moving.
Yeah, great. I think one of the sort of the pillars of need in the development community is predictability. And this type of streamlining, these types of programs, the pre-design plans help to make the process more predictable, both in terms of time and cost. And mm-hmm. so I think that's something that really helps to hopefully spur and incentivize these things to get built.
Completely agree. And that's why I appreciate so much this coming together like this. And I also love that we like beat the deadlines, I guess, or like even the anticipation of it by putting together these plans. It was so that foresight is really great. I'm glad that that occurred and to have been part of it. It was, like you said, they were super beautiful. So my only comment again is on the parking situations. I wish that a lot of them were not within this ordinance. Some of them, I think, can. I'm not gonna motion to add any changes to the parking part, but just wanted it on the record that some of them I think are unnecessary and can, you know, prohibit some of the building that we need to be done. I mean, my house doesn't even, my current home, my current single family home doesn't even comply with some of these. Like, more than 50% of a front yard should be dedicated to vehicle parking. Like, literally, like 80% of my front yard is vehicle parking. It's a driveway. So I wish that wasn't there. And that's my comment on that. But at this time, does anyone have any other further comments or questions or anything? No. Okay. I will entertain a motion at this time, and I think you guys need multiple parts of this motion, correct? If we want to make any recommendations, do they need to be within the motion? Or I know we have to also do the CEQA, make sure that it, you know, conforms to CEQA.
Yeah, so the motion maker can adopt the resolution and then with changes if that's the desire. Mm-hmm. And then the second part would be the environmental review section.
Does anyone want to make a motion?
I'll make a motion. I think I'm reading the room right, but my suggestion is that we adopt a resolution recommending to the City Council that we adopt the amendments outlined to the accessory dwelling unit ordinance that are outlined in tonight's staff report. And that's, again, amendments to Title 16 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code regarding accessory dwelling units, Development Code Amendment 23-001. I believe there's enough justification there that the ordinance amendments are statutorily exempt per section 15282H of the CEQA guidelines. And so I would suggest that we recommend that City Council adopt and continue to improve the amendments.
I'll second that motion.
Before we take a vote,
yeah.
If I can just ask the motion maker, did you want to include some of the recommendations that were discussed in terms of making?
If you don't mind, if you want me to put that in the motion, I can. I mean, I think whatever. I mean, you heard us. I think you heard us. I hope you heard us. You know, simplifying the process for sure. Whatever we can do, and I think a flow chart would be one thing that we would love to see. And you mentioned you're already going to do that, so I mean, I'll put it in the motion if you want me to.
And with regards to height, you know, increasing the 16-foot height limit to 18 to be consistent.
Let me just table the motion for a second just to have discussion about that. Do you want to go back to the legal department to see if we can somehow simplify some of those numbers that are not consistent between what we're proposing and what the state's proposing? Or how would you prefer?
I think what we could do is move to adopt the resolution with the added recommendation that City Council discuss with legal and staff to see if there's any additional streamlining possible.
Yeah, simplification and streamlining.
Simplification, yes.
Yeah, okay. Does that work for you if I make that modification, Andrew? With enough, I mean, in regards to height and square footage inconsistencies?
For the impact fees.
I mean, for the impact fees and for the height. Any other things that you guys can think of?
Yeah, my concern was probably more the impact fees than anything, because it's us encouraging people to move forward.
Sure.
But I'm honestly good either way.
And anything, Jamie, that you saw besides height?
I'm sure there's probably things that I missed in there as well, but I like the idea of having a recommendation to City Council to look at any other areas that could be streamlined and make the process easier that are just kind of incidental and not.
It might be a little too broad, but we could
I mean, for impact fees, I think what I'm hearing is that you would like to see as much matching as possible.
Correct.
Correct.
In terms of square footage and how the impact fees are provided. In terms of the height, I think what we could do is, I mean, if the recommendation would be to go up Commissioner Maravilli said, to 18 feet, that could be your recommendation with the caveat that we are running it by legal prior to going back to city council.
Yeah, as the motion maker, that's what I would suggest, that we do both of those that you just mentioned, that we look at impact fees tied to the square footage, consistent square footage of 800 square feet, and the height taken up to 18 foot pending legal review. Does that work for the motion?
Do we make that very, very complicated for you guys?
Is that specific enough? I think those are the only things, and then just the overall direction for simplification wherever possible.
I think that's more of a recommendation to staff, because I don't think that has anything to do ultimately with the resolution.
Okay. Do you want me to start over? Sorry.
No, that's quite all right. As long as
I'm sorry, this is very unconventional, but we are trying to.
No, from that side of the room, Bruce. Double no.
No, it's
all right. Thank you.
Well done.
Yeah. I took notes of everything that you said, Bruce, and we'll be able to forward those sentiments to the city council.
Thanks, Patrick.
I think I seconded the motion, and that continues on.
Second carries.
The motion carries.
So I think we need a vote at this point.
Vice Chair Berlin?
Yes.
Chair Maravilia?
Yes.
Commissioner Roof?
Yes.
Commissioner Sackerson?
Yes.
Motion passes, whatever it may be.
Yeah, that's the last motion you're going to let
me do. We have it. Yes.
Sorry. Regained my composure for a second. That was
you need a
great. For myself, apparently. Okay. We'll move on to item 8B, because we are not done with our public hearing items yet, which is consideration of amendments to Title 16 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code regarding the definition of a formula business and family, and finding that this action is exempt from review under CEQA. Do we have a report on this one?
We do, but if you give us just a second, we're working on some technology.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Very slow loading up, so.
It's time to get you off of Windows 7. I don't know.
I don't think they make them anymore.
Yeah, no guarantee. I don't know, maybe not. I still have a great yes. It's a lake of
What did you say you have?
A 5.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
My mother-in-law gave my son her iPhone 6, and he's like, this thing's not even supported anymore, yeah. Mom.
They still make them, so.
They do?
I just got it last year. I mean, I
didn't know that.
My mom had a flip phone until last year.
Now you got
You're bringing them back.
Or I watch.
Not for long.
There you go.
There we go. Yay.
Way to keep it together, Brian. You're good.
Okay. Oops. All right. Thank you. Brian Pedrotti, Community Development Director. Our second item tonight are amendments to Title 16 of the Rio Grande Municipal Code regarding the definition of formula businesses. And so a summary of the action is a recommendation to the City Council to adopt an ordinance amendment to Section 16.04 of the Municipal Code related to the definition of formula business. So a little bit of background. In 2005, the City Council started to receive some public comment with concerns about formula businesses within the city and particularly within the village. In March of 2005, the City Council held a study session in kind of response to those public comments and directed staff to research alternatives to take a look at. So that in April of 2005, that City Council study session was held, and there were concerns that were identified, including the proliferation of formula businesses kind of all around in other cities, and whether a kind of concern that they would detract from the character of the village and its architecturally distinct district. And there was a separate concern that it would cause startup independent retail businesses to be priced out of the village. So the City Council requested that staff go to the Planning Commission and return with an ordinance to prohibit and kind of limit formula businesses. And that did come back to the City Council in 2005, August, and the City Council approved an ordinance which prohibited formula businesses in the Village Commercial District and the Village Mixed Use District. And it included a definition of what a formula business was. So these are the Village Core Downtown and the Village Mixed Use Districts where formula businesses were restricted and are restricted today. And so this was the definition that was built into the code. And I'll read it really quick. We'll get into some of the pieces of it in a bit. But a formula business shall mean a business limited to retail trade uses and restaurants that is required by a contractual or other arrangement to maintain standardized services and the same or similar name, or trademark, which causes it to be substantially identical to six or more establishments, regardless of ownership or location, and which satisfies one of the following two criteria. It has an exterior design or architecture, signs, decor, or similar features in a style which is distinctive to and standardized among the chain or group. And number two, it is a fast food restaurant. So what does that exactly mean? It's kind of can be broken down into some pieces here. So it includes, it's specific to retail trade and restaurant uses. And therefore, it excludes offices, hotels, inns, other businesses that are not retail or restaurant. It does allow opportunity for local startup stores or restaurants. And then fast food restaurants kind of blanketed more than six. If you have more than six establishments, you're prohibited in the village. For sit-down restaurants and retail, if you're more than six, you're prohibited unless there's a bit of a caveat there. If you can provide an exterior design or architecture, signs, decor, or similar features in a style which is distinctive to and standardized among the chain or group, you cease to be a formula business. And so this kind of came to staff's attention and the City Council's attention in 2023 when Rory's Artisanal Creamery made an application in the village. They, at the time, had five other store locations, and so they did not meet the definition of a formula business because they were under the six. However, at a City Council meeting on May 23rd, the City Council expressed concerns about kind of re-looking at the formula business definition for the village and directed staff to review the definition and return with a study session. So on October 10th, the City Council did have that study session. During that time, the City Council really was concerned about this sort of loophole in the formula business definition, which would allow a sit-down restaurant, a sit-down restaurant chain to locate in the village. And as long as they did some changes to, you know, the some of the items that we talked about. So the city council directed staff to return with an amendment and gave us some direction to go through the planning commission. One was to increase the 6 establishment threshold. One was that the definition of a formula business should apply to all business types, not just retail and restaurant. And then removal of the 2 criteria in the definition, which are the fast food and the exterior, the design, decor, that thing. We'll get a little bit more into that. So this is a bit of a reiteration, but the definition of a formula business, just to kind of reiterate, it's inclusive of both retail restaurants and is required by contractual or other arrangement to maintain standardized services, et cetera, et cetera. And so the way the definition reads now, in addition to those that definition, it must meet only one of the following. It's a fast food restaurant, or it has the exterior design, architecture, signs, et cetera, that's similar in a style which is distinctive to the standardization group. So back to the proposed revisions that are in the ordinance that you see here, the definition. The definition would then expand formula businesses to all businesses. Again, currently limited to retail and restaurants, it would remove the categories completely and just apply to businesses. On the qualifying criteria, let me go back here. Actually, maybe I'll go forward just to show where that's located. So the section in the middle here would increase the number of formula businesses to 10. Well, I'll go back. I guess expansion to all businesses. So we'll go back here. This is missing the limited to retail trade uses in restaurants. So that would be eliminated with the new definition. Qualifying criteria, which would be A and B, those would be removed, as you can see here. And then the number of locations, which would allow it would increase the number from 6 to 10, and that's again located in the middle there. In addition, there was a discussion about legal non-conforming and how this would apply to formula businesses. So the definition as proposed would expand to all businesses and would create some legal non-conforming businesses in the village. For instance, there's some real estate offices that are national chains. Those businesses would fall into the same legal non-conforming category that other legal non-conforming uses are in the city. So it would be discontinued if the use is changed to a conforming use, or if the use is discontinued for a contiguous period of 180 days or more. Non-conforming uses could continue through a change of ownership, tenancy, management if the building, land use, or activity is substantially unchanged. So that gives the parameters there. The definition revision is supported by the general plan. There are a couple of economic development policies that talk about the small town character of the village and maintaining it as a vibrant downtown core. And then a land use element policy that supports maintaining the village core as a symbolic function and unique business center of the city. So the alternatives are to adopt the resolution recommending the city council adopt the code amendment, or modify and adopt the resolution, or do not adopt the resolution, provide other direction to staff. And staff's recommendation is to adopt the resolution recommending the City Council adopt the ordinance amendment and determining that ordinance amendment is not a project subject to CEQA. I'd also like to point out and note that the original notice included a revision to the definition of family based on a recommendation from the housing element that was in there when it was approved. But staff, along with our legal team, has determined that the definition is not problematic and does not, not need to be amended at this time. So there are no amendments related to family.
Okay. In here. I was wondering why that got thrown in.
Yeah, I was wondering.
Thank you for that. Do we have any questions? Commissioner Sackerson, would you like to start this time?
No, I actually, I think that this was actually a long time coming because I actually do remember that conversation about Rory's, and I was like, well, don't they have like 8 or 9 locations now? And it started a whole conversation, and I think that it does create quite of a loophole. I'm trying to think of scenarios where the non-conforming uses, so you mentioned like, I'm assuming like C21 is right here. So if they change ownership, which they did recently, they can continue to operate as such as long as that doesn't change.
That's correct.
Okay. And then should it change, then it just goes back to whatever the new applicant or the new owner wants to. They just have to apply all over again and, again, prove not to be a formula business at that time?
Correct.
Okay. I just needed that clarification. I think otherwise it's pretty straightforward. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Roof?
I really appreciate the 6 to 10 change. I think I understand what the point of that is. And it seems like one of the main drivers behind this was not stifling economic development. Like, we've had some empty storefronts sitting there. So I understand wanting to increase that and hope we can get attract more business. Can you maybe speak a little bit more to the council's idea of like getting rid of just retail and restaurants and broadening it to all business? Because then that seems like kind of counteracts, like, why would we want to do that? Like, what would be the thought process behind that?
I think that during the study session, the council was a little, I think, surprised, and they'd kind of, I think, been surprised through sort of the study session and through some of the other discussions that it didn't apply to all businesses. And we're wondering why it had just been subject to retail and restaurant. And I think there was a mention the genesis of this also had to do with a coffee shop that was planning to locate in the village. And so that might have been just the focus at the time as to why it was retail and restaurant. But really the formula business definition really can apply to all businesses. And the idea behind it is the same, to not stifle economic development, but to help startups to make sure that it's affordable for, you know, affordable tenancy in the village. And so I think the backbone behind it is kind of the same.
Great, thank you. And then just one more question. Why would we want to, it seems like eliminating those last two criteria, why would we want to eliminate the fast food thing? I can't imagine anyone wanting a McDonald's on the corner, right? I mean, am I misunderstanding that? Like, why is it just because it's irrelevant given the other criteria?
Well, the way it's written now, fast food restaurant is the only type of establishment that has the hard 6 and you're a formula business. This actually, just by removing it, it just doesn't focus. Fast food restaurant will still be 6. Be 10.
It would just be sort of irrelevant for those kind of national chain.
That's correct.
Restaurants.
It strengthens it for every other type of restaurant, and puts fast food in the same category with them, or brings those into the same category as fast food restaurant. So 10 would be the maximum, and you know, you I guess another way to say that is the way that it's written today, a fast food restaurant is the only type of restaurant that could not change its exterior design in any way, its architecture, signs, decor, and somehow not become a formula business.
Right. Okay. I gotcha. Thank you. That's it for me. Thanks.
Thank you. Commissioner Berlin?
Yeah. Great questions, Virginia. Thank you for that. And Brian as well. One question I had. So on the legally nonconforming, you mentioned some real estate possibilities. I'm just thinking of anything that's in the Village Core. And so let me just throw this out there as a wild card, and let's hope it never even happens. But Agrarian Hotel, maybe La Quinta Hotels, or somebody wants to buy them. He's done. He's ready to sell. Could he sell to a nationwide chain? And where would that position him in regards to all this? Or any hotel, for that matter, where hotel chains. And the other thing that I think about that's in the core that's Target and might be subject are the gas stations. Where did the gas stations, you know, be it the Chevron, the whatever it is, the green one now, Sinclair, which we don't have many of around, and the, you know, and the mobile. So, I mean, where did the gas stations specifically in the hotels? And we might as well ask about the car dealers too. If someday, whatever, some big nationwide, maybe Tesla wants to roll in here, how does that fit into it?
The dealerships aren't in the thing.
Okay, I did notice they're not on the map, the car dealership. So I'll let you answer.
So there's a couple things there. Yeah. So they would become if they at some point became a formula business under this new definition, then they would become legal nonconforming, and then the discontinuation. Provisions would apply, so that if they changed it to a some other use, or if it was discontinued again for a contiguous period of 180 days or more.
Okay.
For instance, Rory's is now a legal nonconforming use because it is now a formula business. Doc Bernstein's was a legal nonconforming because I believe there were more than six of those.
Uh-huh.
So that will that will occur. It's okay. Just if it changes, then yes, they would need to go back through. In fact, I do believe that Agrarian is part of the Best Western chain.
That's what I wondered about. I think it is as well. So, okay.
Yeah.
So maybe it's a moot point. Thank you for that. And I think that's the only question I had. Thanks for a very thorough staff report.
Thank you. I guess in line with that, there's obviously cases that have come in. Well, I guess they're not because they were not retail, or the hotel came in between 2005 and now. So they weren't retail and
restaurant.
Sorry. Thank you for that other word. So that type of thing would not be able to happen with this new.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on whether or not we haven't done a determination with the Agrarian, for instance, whether or not it, you know, I know offhand that it's part of Best Western, but we would need to do a determination of whether or not it meets the definition of our formula business.
Okay.
And I'm not sure it would. That's a possibility that it might not have been able to locate.
Has there been cases of like, quote unquote formula businesses coming into the village and being like, I want to open something here. And you're like, nope, sorry, you can't. You're a formula business. Does that happen?
My understanding is that that's rare if it happens at all. And I don't know if our other staff who have been here longer than I have have experienced something like that.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head since 2015, since I started here.
Okay.
We've maybe gotten some informal questions from people, but as soon as we let them know about the regulations, that kind of ends the conversation there. But I can't think of any applications that we received that we had to deny.
So we're not like missing out on, they're not running to get a spot in the village at this point, like giant, what we would consider formula businesses. And we're not missing out on that, like economic revenue or anything like that.
I don't think so. We were recently asked to identify vacant commercial locations in the village and we couldn't come up with any.
Okay.
So I think we're doing pretty good in terms of tenancy and Like I said, I can't think of any applications that we ended up denying.
Cool.
So unless these larger companies are doing their research before they ever contact us, then I don't think we're even on their radar.
Got it. Perfect. Thank you.
One more question.
Yeah, go ahead.
I saw in the, you included the action minutes from the city council meeting of October 10th, the study session and what have you, but it looks like City Attorney Rosen provided legal clarification regarding the draft ordinance at that time. I would assume that legal is under, you know, looking at this modification. Okay.
That's correct. That's correct.
I would assume so, but I figured I'd ask.
And I will add one more thing that the City Council did discuss. So we are doing a general plan update, as you well know. And one of the things that they had, they wanted us to look at in the long term, not with this particular change in the definition, was the village mixed use areas and whether or not some of those areas were appropriate to have this formula business restriction still. It does apply still based on the proposed revisions, but in the long term, that was one of the things, as well as looking at some of the properties that are also not zoned either VCD or VMU in the core. So we would kind of look holistically at that as part of the general plan update as well. So there might be a future change that's proposed as part of that.
That makes a lot of sense. Thank you. Yeah, go ahead.
Can I just have one more question? If an applicant comes in and says, I'd like to lease an open space, pretending we have one available, is that something that if they're at 10, but like one's going to go out of business next year, whatever, they have some extenuating circumstance. They're like, no, we're really not a formula business. We're just kind of on the cusp. Is that something where they could ask for a conditional use permit of some sort that we could consider? Is that even an option?
Not the way it's written. There would not be an out. They would need to demonstrate how they meet the definition of the code. And since it's a use, the formula business is a use that's embedded as an allowed use only in the only in the VCD and the VMU. They couldn't do a variance for something like that.
Okay, thank you.
Can I ask one more question? Really quick, this is a silly question, but what is HCO on the map, on your slide there? It says village mixed use and then / HCO. I was just wondering what that stands
for. That's the historic core, I think, core overlay.
Oh, okay. Historic core overlay. Okay. I'm just want to know what that meant. And then also, this isn't technically a formula business question, but it kind of speaks to use in the village here. I was just, and I did ask this ahead, but just so everybody is aware, I was wondering if you could illuminate a little more how, like, Harvest Church was able to take over that retail space, even though it's a retail, it was supposed to be retail space. Can you explain that process a little more?
Yes. So there was originally, church uses are allowed according to when it first came in, churches were allowed as a conditional use in that district. But at the time, there was a federal law, and I'm not remembering the name of it. I think Andrew may know it offhand.
Is it religious land use? That's what Andrew said.
That's correct.
Okay.
Which essentially, in a nutshell, it requires that jurisdictions or limits them from imposing a higher level of permit than a church would otherwise have in another district. And so essentially it required us to the max level permit that would be allowed would be a minor use permit. And it met those limitations in the minor use permit, and so it was allowed.
So if it's a religious use, it kind of trumps anything our local jurisdiction might want to.
It doesn't trump everything, but it puts certain limitations in place as to the level of permit that you could require for that.
Like, I'm just thinking hypothetically, if like a church wanted to like take over the agrarian hotel, like we're going to have a church compound here, they could do that because it's a religious use. Is that, am I understanding that right?
There might be an oversimplification of that law, the Religious Land Use and I think it's Institutionalized Persons Act, but essentially, I think that could be a possibility if a church so desired. But they would still have to meet the certain development standards for the lower permit. So in this case, Harvest Church did meet the development standards for a minor use permit, and staff is able to make the findings to approve that.
Okay.
And that's how.
But a formula business couldn't do that.
Correct.
There's no lowering of a threshold in any way for that, other than.
No, there's no corresponding federal act that discusses formula businesses.
Sorry, I'm just trying to understand it.
Okay. Yeah. And as Brian mentioned, formula business is listed as a distinct land use, and pursuant to our municipal code, if a land use is not allowed in a certain district, there's not an avenue to appeal that. It's kind of is what it is.
Okay,
and that's the case
you.
In the village core.
Thank you. I forget where we were. I think that was were all of our commissioner questions at this point. Do we have any public comment on this agenda item? No. All right. Nothing in the room. Is there anyone online?
Madam Chair, there are no members of the public on Zoom.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I will close public comment on this item. Any other further comments from my fellow commissioners? All right. Can I have a motion from anyone?
I'll motion to adopt the resolution recommending the City Council adopt the proposed ordinance amendment and determine that the ordinance amendment is not a project subject to CEQA because it has no potential to result in either the direct or reasonably foreseeable indirect physical change in the environment.
Thank you.
The whole thing. I'm going to get it right.
I'll second.
Thank you so much. Can we have a vote, please?
Commissioner Roof?
Yes.
Commissioner Sackerson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Berlin?
Yes.
Chair Maravilla?
Yes. Thank you. Energetic discussions tonight in our public hearing items, so appreciate that. Moving on to non-public hearing items, we don't have any on our agenda tonight. The item 10 is notice of administrative items. Does anyone have any questions on any? There's only one, but the one administrative item on there. Thank you. I was going to ask that too.
This will be the third year they've held this event at Heritage Square Park, but it is a very small group of individuals that all own Corvairs, the type of car.
Okay.
And so they have a small car show and get together, and it ends up being a nonprofit fundraiser, and they select a group that receives the funds, all the proceeds. So last year, Friends of 40 Prado got around a $1,500 donation from the event.
Oh, that's
and then before that, I can't remember the exact organization, but it was similar in terms of the amount of the donation.
Great. So small car show where funding goes to local nonprofits. Love it. Great. Is there any public comment on that item? No. No one online still?
No one on Zoom.
Thank you. Commission communications?
I got one. My oldest son is home. He lives in London these days, but he's a theater guy, and he's doing a free play on Grandma's coming up a week from this Sunday at the Women's Center. 2:00 on the 28th of January. And the city was kind enough to waive fees. He's a nonprofit. He's clearly nonprofit. But he's a wonderful kid. And he and some of his AG High grads from long time ago, theater people, just three people doing this really cool play that they interviewed grandmas and are going to kind of weave a conversation with you about grandmas. So welcome to the public. No fees. It's free. Come to the Women's Center, 2 o'clock on the 28th. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Very interesting. Any other commissioner communications?
Random note. I'm sure we all got it. That little flyer in the mail about how our tax dollars are being spent. Thank you for that. I don't know who was responsible for that, but I appreciate it. And I will tell you, random people I talked to, as well as friends, all noticed. Like, I got at least 5 different comments from people who never talk about city things ever, saying, hey, did you get that thing in the mail? It was really nice to see where our money's going. And so whatever you guys did, that staff, thank you so much. I think it's a really good thing.
We will pass that on to our management team, city clerk's office.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I echo that. That's awesome.
Totally.
Definitely.
Agreed.
Staff communications.
Thank you. Brian Pedrotti, Community Development Director. Just a couple. General plan update. We're hitting the new year with stakeholder interviews coming up and working toward a visioning workshop in February. We also have a new city manager. I think this is the first time maybe we've expressed that at Planning Commission. I'm sure you all know, but Matt Downing is our new city manager. He was the community development director for the city of Pismo Beach and is an incredible addition to our city. So he was formerly a planning manager with the city of Raichi, where our Andrew Perez right now. So he's got a lot of experience from the city from previously as well. In addition, we hired the our department here hired a new building tech, and that's Emmy Ochoa. She is our new in-house building permit tech. So she'll be sort of the in-house face of our building division, which mm-hmm. is a our building official. Plans examiners and inspection team is done by a firm called CSG. And they're local, but they're out of the city hall. Emmy is also fluent in Spanish, and so we hope to have a better customer experience for some of our customers at City Hall as well. So that's exciting.
That's great. Thank you so much for
good
that
news.
Update. I think that's it. So I will adjourn the meeting at 7:37. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.